I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Jamie Gerdson. Jamie is the president and CEO of Apollo Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. And Jamie, you're also an author. But before we start talking about the subject of the day, which is your new book called Squirrels, Boats, and Thoroughbreds, Lessons for Leading Change in Traditional Business, I want to congratulate you and all of the employees at Apollo for just winning, just very recently, the Gehring Center Family Business of the Year. That is wonderful.
Thank you very much. You know, it's the employees that make it happen. I was unfortunately the only one there to accept it on behalf of the company, but we are incredibly fortunate to have such a wonderful team behind us to make those things happen.
And your book is really about leadership and motivating teams and taking a business from where it is today into future success and growth. How did you decide to write the book?
The book is a collaboration of 10 years of experience. When I started back at Apollo in 2002, one of the things that we had to really look at was I was a very traditional business. It was a small, family-owned company doing what most traditional businesses do. How do we go from 1 month to the next month? And I had come from a very non-traditional background, which was a technology startup. So I took some of what I had learned there and infused it into Apollo and really sort of went on this long journey about how to innovate a traditional business.
Well, what's the significance of the book title, Squirrels, Boats, and Thoroughbred?
I've been asked that a lot. So
I'll bet.
it's a different title than most people would think about just a traditional business book. First thing you have to understand is that traditional business is defined as typically companies of 100 employees or less that are in a traditional business, such as professional services, plumbing, heating and air, auto dealers, services and businesses that have been around a long time, even manufacturers. Squirrels is interesting. I heard a story one time about if you want to climb a tree, what do you want? You want a dog or a squirrel? And when you look around, most companies have more dogs than they have squirrels, and they tend to not go from one level to another as a result. The thoroughbreds, or the boats portion, is interesting. I rode competitively for a long time and went to college on a scholarship for it. And in rowing or crew, the fastest boats always were the ones that were in sync. And so there's some commonality among that in the book. And then thoroughbreds, you know, everybody thinks to have a winning team, you need the best and the brightest. And my inclination is, yes, you need some of those, but too many chiefs don't make a tribe.
Let's talk about leadership in medium-sized businesses and why you think it's often overlooked in that business size space.
If you look at where all the interest in today's media as well as capital, it's either in the startup phase or it's in the Fortune 2000 space. But yet what everybody fails to realize is 96% of all businesses in the U.S. are $1 million or less in revenue. And that actually are the true job creators in the U.S. Startups in general, while we fund them and we get great innovation, we don't necessarily get consistent job growth from that space. Fortune 2000's problem is those companies are so large, typically they look to shed jobs through innovation. My sort of philosophy is that if you take the middle ground, which is most of the employment today, if we focus on improving leadership, whether it's through coaching, whether it's through mentorship, whether it's through taking what they do and helping them understand they need to make a leap of faith from traditional to sort of what we call conventional, they have this sort of really conventional type thinking, to what we call sound thinking, the reality is they'll create more jobs, increase not only their employment, but also increase their communities.
We've been talking to Jamie Gerdson. Jamie is the CEO and president of Apollo Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing, but he's also an author of a book called Squirrels, Boats, and Thoroughbreds, Lessons for Leading Change in Traditional Businesses. Jamie, if folks listening today would like to pick up the book, where can they find it?
They can find it on Amazon. They can find it Barnes & Noble.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Jamie Gerdson. Jamie is the president of Apollo Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. And Jamie's also the author of a new business book, Squirrels, Boats, and Thoroughbreds, Lessons for Leading Change in Traditional Businesses. And Jamie, I can't imagine a much more traditional business than a heating, cooling, and plumbing company in Cincinnati, Ohio. But you actually have changed and innovated quite a bit in that business in the 10 years you've been there. And in your book, you describe some of the things that I assume you learned during that process. What is the push-pull theory? That sounds really interesting to me.
It's interesting. That theory sort of came out of rowing, but you know, the idea is that when I first joined Apollo, I really thought I could just push everybody, and I could push everybody to that next level. And that works when you have about 25 employees, because you know everybody, you know what drives them, you know what motivates them. The challenge is that as you start to grow and your employee base grows, you can't do it anymore. You don't have enough time in the day. And so you have to develop an empowerment model that allows your employees to actually pull you. It really is a leap of faith to go from a push to a pull. Most entrepreneurs are very happy. Like, let's say I'm going to have a daily huddle every 5 minutes. I'm going to tell everybody what to do, and they go do it. What happens when you have 75 people that are in leadership roles, and quite frankly, you can't push them because honestly, you just can't do it. I think one of the things that we have to think long and hard about all the time as leaders in small businesses is how do we make the leap of faith from a pushing environment to a pulling environment?
Well, and that's hard, Jamie, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs, it's their business. They keep it very close to their vest. It's very difficult in many situations for business owners in the size of companies you're talking about to delegate that responsibility.
And I think that goes back to the belief that you're the only one who can do your job. And I think when an owner can finally realize that they are the first person that should be fired, that's probably a good first step. And that seems a little brash, but I think at the end of the day, everybody thinks that nobody can do it better than them. And I'd tell you, last I checked, there are 9 billion people on the planet. I'm pretty sure there's probably somebody absolutely better than at something I do all the time. So I think you got to be sort of humble about that and realize that your people really do want to lead.
Well, and if you think about it, they're the ones down on the ground. They're the ones dealing with the clients and the customers. They're the ones that if you just ask their opinion on many things, that they could give you some very good advice on how to put improvements in place and things like that. So I think you're right on. Let's talk about another aspect that I'm just really interested in. And this whole discussion of squirrels, boats, thoroughbreds. I know you talk about some dogs in your book. You're relating these to types of employees, types of people within organizations. Maybe you can describe the significance of that.
You know, I had a black and a chocolate lab, and I loved those dogs very much, but the last I checked, they were never going to climb the tree in the backyard. And sometimes in business, we ask employees to do things that they are incapable of doing, and we wonder why the result is always the same. Why is it not different? And I think when I look at squirrels, if you want to climb a tree, I'm going to pick a squirrel over a dog all the time. The idea about thoroughbreds, you know, it's really interesting. I think in sports teams, it's interesting when they go ahead and they go out in free agency and they get all these great athletes, but they never play well together. And so I think you have to look at your organization in the same way. I want horses that run fast. I want squirrels to climb trees. But, you know, you got to have a mix of different people all the time. And the boats portion is that when everybody in the boat is rowing the same way in the direction, it's actually easier and you go much faster and it's much more quiet.
The key is they have to know which direction to go.
Correct. Very much so.
Again, the book's called Squirrels, Boats, Thoroughbreds, Lessons for Leading Change in Traditional Businesses. And Jamie, you're about to have a book signing coming up. Where else can folks find the book?
You can find it on Amazon. You can do digital or you can buy soft or hardcover. It's also available on fishermansfoundation.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. You know, Crystal, we recently wrote an article about succession planning for our column in the Inquirer. And, you know, I think most businesses spend the first 5 years of their business life just trying to survive. And then after that, they think about succession planning, meaning they think about doing it. But a lot of businesses never really get to first base on that. Why do you think that is?
Well, because it's a very difficult thing for business owners to wrap their heads around, I believe. The business is like a child, right? It's something that you've grown, something that you developed. And to actually think about selling it, walking away from it, putting it in the hands of someone else in terms of running it, it's just a difficult thing. But bottom line is it's critical that as business owners that you go down that path and that you do have a good succession plan in place, certainly many years before you really ever think of exiting the business entirely.
Often it happens a lot faster than you think because of unforeseen circumstances. So it's always good to have some type of at least contingency plan in place. But a succession plan typically is a longer term plan that's more orderly, and you're trying to transition the management of the business, the leadership of the business, and sometimes the ownership, but not always.
I think a lot of times business owners just get too hung up into the emotional aspects of this decision. This is especially true if they have children or other relatives that work in the business. And what my advice generally is, you need to consider a couple of different plans. So go down the plan of keeping the business in the family. What's that going to look like? Do you even have children that can take on the leadership role? Are they qualified to do that? But also consider what happens if you sell the business. What are the implications there? Maybe your family as a whole are better off if you sell the business, if you don't have children in place who can take those leadership responsibilities or pay you what you need to be able to have the type of retirement that you've always dreamed of.
People and companies that buy businesses want to buy a well-managed business that's got a decent market share in whatever industry it's in. And if you can position your company so that it's well-managed, it's profitable, it has good cash flow, strong balance sheet, whether you end up selling it or transferring it to a family member or to a group of employees, you know, you'll be better off for having done that.
So our advice to our clients generally always is just continue to grow value in your company. Know what drives value, what causes your company to increase in value so that you can have different options when you reach the stage of truly wanting to exit the business on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, a lot of people think that they have to cut the ties and walk out the door completely, but you don't. There are lots of options in terms of how you gradually or ultimately move your succession plan along.
And that's true whether you transfer management to a family member or to a non-family member. You can still have ownership if you choose to want to do that.
What many people fail to understand is that when you sell the business and you no longer are generating the stream of income that you're getting in terms of salary or distributions or some of the fringe benefits that the business pays on your behalf, often you add all those different things up, it's a chunk of money. And so you have to sell the business for a big enough price tag that after tax, you can generate a similar stream of income or whatever you need for retirement. And that number usually is bigger than what people anticipate. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Crystal, we recently wrote an article about how to find a CPA for you and your business. And this is a question we get a lot of times just from acquaintances, from friends. You know, what's the best way to find a CPA? How do you choose the right one? How do you choose a financial advisor? Because a lot of people don't necessarily understand the technical aspects of what a CPA does, so they don't quite know how to judge how to hire the right one.
And the other question many people ask is, when do I need a CPA? Just because someone is a tax preparer or an accountant doesn't mean they're not a certified public accountant. So in all cases, you may not need a CPA. So that is another question that should be addressed.
Right. I guess the question is, are you satisfied with the relationship you have now with whatever professional that you work with? Do you know how to judge that professional? Are they giving you advice? Are they just doing what you ask them to do? Are they preparing compliance? Are they giving you suggestions?
Are they an advocate? I like to compare and contrast, really, an advocate with an advisor. To me, an advocate is someone out there who is taking steps ahead. They're proactive. They're not always reactive and just trying to help you analyze what you did last week or last year. They're out there looking at your current plans, how you want to grow your business, giving you some thoughts based on their experience of how they can help you and things you can do and really not do. Oftentimes, when you avoid a mistake, that's just as valuable advice. So is your plan or your advisor out there being an advocate for you and your business?
Well, another common issue that people have, when they ask a question, they get an answer, but they don't understand what the answer means.
They speak gobbledygook?
Right. Some advisors try to show their clients how smart they are instead of really get to the answer.
Yes, especially when it comes to taxes. These are folks who I call that speak in terms of code sections. And, you know, the reality of it is all your client wants and all you as an individual want, business owners, for somebody to help you solve your problem in language that you understand.
You know, one good way to get the right relationship, if you're looking for one, is talk to your peers. Talk to other people who have circumstances similar to yours. See what their relationship with their advisor is like and see if their advisor, if it's a good relationship and they're recommended, will work with you.
It's that relationship. You really hit the nail on the head, Tom. I do think it's all about the relationship. That is an invaluable component of this. It shouldn't just be about cost. You should measure and judge the value that your advisors are bringing to the table. And that oftentimes is difficult for a lot of people to understand.
So if you were looking for a CPA, Crystal, what would you do? Set up about 10 meetings and try to get a bunch of proposals and then read through them and try to pick one?
Yeah, that would be exactly. I don't think so. To me, the biggest thing that I can do is I talk to others, other successful business owners, people who I respect and admire, ask them what kind of traits that they perceive that they get from their current CPA. What value do they get? And then talk to just a few of those people. I don't believe in what you had just said, getting all the proposals and the costs, that type of thing. To me, it's about what value do you get? Do you feel like that you're getting more for your money in terms of advice and solutions?
Yeah, and hopefully when you're talking to that prospective advisor, they're asking you about your goals. They're trying to learn something about you so they can determine if they can help you. They're not just trying to sell their knowledge.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Carol Feeney and Kristen Waters. And these two ladies have started an organization called Project Blue Collar. Let's discuss that. Maybe you all can explain what that Project Blue Collar is all about and why you think it's so important.
Project Blue Collar is a movement to celebrate rescue dogs and change the perception of rescue dogs from being damaged to being priceless. So we basically took the whole wristband craze and transferred it to the dogs. So the dogs actually become the marketer of their own cause.
And I'm looking at one right here, a collar that is, and it's a beautiful blue collar and it's a conversation starter.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the collar's not meant to be a utility collar in any way. It's truly just like the wristbands with a call to action, and the collar says support the underdog on it. So it's a way to give your dog a voice. Your dog can actually help market for his fellow underdogs.
Well, how did the two of you meet and decide to start this project?
Carol and I met a little over a year ago, and so we quickly bonded and actually helped each other with a few dogs in need and found foster homes for them. And Carol came up with this idea, it was about February of 2012, where she realized that there's really no way to distinguish whether a dog is a rescue or not. One of the things she noticed too was that people would be so surprised that a great dog would be a rescue. And we felt like there was something kind of wrong with that, because we as rescuers have seen them in their darkest days and we know their past, but we also have seen their transformation and it's palpable. The dogs show it right away that they have possibilities that they look forward to, and they're so in the moment and they respond so well to love. And we just wanted a way for people to be able to talk about their rescue pride, because a lot of people are very proud to have adopted their dogs.
I was born a rescuer, so I've been rescuing animals since I could walk, practically. Since the internet and Facebook started, I mean, Facebook has revolutionized animal rescue, and it actually gave like-minded people a way to connect. And what you've seen as a result is you've got tens of thousands of grassroots rescue organizations that have started across the country.
And people can also take part in saving a dog or saving a cat or saving an animal in so many ways. So the fun thing that she talked about Facebook, there are people who simply sharing a dog's picture can be part of the process in giving that dog a bright future. So it's an unprecedented way for so many people to come together on behalf of an animal in need.
Someone, for whatever reason, couldn't take care of a dog anymore, couldn't keep cat in their home. For that cat to be adopted or that dog to be adopted, is that something that you've found?
It's easier.
Yeah.
It's easier than it used to be, certainly, because it's a way to get their story out, mm-hmm. and get people's attention and their pictures. And, you know, we can shine a greater light on them. But it's never easy. You know?
It's never easy. I think what it's really helped is the death row animals. A lot of times these rural shelters don't have the adoption traffic, and there's a standard in this country where they kill for space. And so many of these grassroots organizations have come to the rescue of these death row animals because they not only themselves have a rescue, a foster-based rescue, but they can also network with others to bring into no-kill shelters.
Well, and if folks listening today wanted to learn more about Project Blue Collar, perhaps get a blue collar, how can they go about reaching out to you and finding you?
So we communicate a lot via Facebook. We have a website, projectbluecollar.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Carol Feeney and Kristen Waters. They are the co-founders of Project Blue Collar. And Project Blue Collar is a somewhat unique business, although less unique now than they used to be. And that's a business that's got profits with a purpose, a social enterprise, really. So you're a for-profit business, but with really a purpose that a lot of people would associate with a not-for-profit.
It's easy to confuse us with a nonprofit because most businesses or most organizations that help animals tend to be nonprofit. A lot of the people that we are supporting are nonprofits or they're 501c3s or they're small grassroots organizations.
Basically, you're supporting rescue dogs, right? Rescue shelters.
Our goal with Project Blue Collar, it's a little bit of a bigger, broader view. We want to unite all the people who believe in rescue dogs, all the people who just believe in animals and want to help animals. But more importantly, we want to drive traffic to adoption centers. We want to have people choose adoption as their first option, or at least consider it or be inspired in some way by seeing a dog that's worn a blue collar, understanding that rescue dogs are just as good as new. We really want to be creating awareness. We want to create buzz about what are they talking about? Why are rescue dogs so great?
By getting a rescue dog, though, or a rescue cat, I mean, you're not only saving an animal's life, but you really are still able to have that loving relationship with an animal.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, rescues come in all sizes, ages, shapes, forms. You can get kittens and newborn puppies through rescue. I'm a puppy foster myself, and I've had over 40 puppies this year that I've fostered. So there's plenty of puppies available if somebody's looking for a puppy. And also people who are stuck on purebreds, they want a specific breed. There's breed-specific rescues out there. So there's really nothing that you can't get.
Well, your company, Project Blue Collar, has been in the news lately. You've won several awards. You were the winner of the Bad Girl Venture Award. You won Startup Weekend. You were the business that won that. That's got to be very exciting for you and obviously give some testament to the really good idea that you have here for your business.
We have won just about everything we've stepped out to do. Startup Weekend was a big surprise because I kind of did that on a whim. It tends to be high tech, and I was the only company in there that wasn't high tech or idea in there that wasn't high tech.
Why do you think it's so appealing? And what is it about the company that you perceive that you are winning these different awards?
You know, it pulls at the deep rooted emotions that we all have. And we all really do want to see the underdog succeed.
Well, you say you're not high tech, and certainly your end product is not high tech. But You really have an e-commerce component of your business, don't you?
Completely. We do, and also we are very active with social media. Being a startup, we didn't have any funds to do any marketing or advertising, and so we just leverage the power of social media. And the exciting thing is that we're approaching 20,000 Facebook fans in just a year.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's been so fun because really central to our movement is the storytelling aspect of what we're up to. It's
like, and again, if folks do want to go on, read some of those stories,
sure.
I'm holding this really beautiful blue collar that says support the underdog, that you're encouraging people who have rescue dogs to actually put it on them, just as a sign, a conversation piece, part of the movement, correct?
Right.
Where can people find your site, your business site, your Facebook site?
Yeah, projectbluecollar.com. We have a store there where you can get the blue collar and you can get other products that have our logo on there and have the same intention.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Nicole Gordon. Nicole is the manager of community relations of Fidelity Investments, and you're also a proud Northern Kentucky University graduate of the College of Informatics. You are here today to talk about a program that Fidelity is initiating and has initiated with several schools in the Northern Kentucky area. Maybe you can talk about Investing with Students program.
Investing in Students program is really one of the many ways that we work with students in greater Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. And through the program, the premise is to look at how we can relate investing to math and show students that it's fun and relatable and something that they can be interested in.
Well, how did Fidelity get involved in this particular program?
A couple years ago, we piloted the program in Kenton County with two schools, and we expanded that program last year to cover 1,300 students in Kenton County and Covington. And we really looked at our expertise as a firm, and we provide guidance to our clients, and how we can expand that into the schools. And we saw a need. We saw that the Common Core standards were out, and that there was a way to sync up with seventh grade math curriculum, a way that we could respond and provide some guidance for teachers in that.
So is it primarily Fidelity employees who are taking their time to perform this activity in the schools?
Yes. So we have over 350 volunteers engaged each year, and those volunteers go in and take their time, and they mentor students and do different activities throughout the year.
How do they like it? Is it fun for them? It's got to be gratifying, I would think.
It's definitely fun. It's a way that they're able to get out of their normal day environment and go in and impact students and look at ways that they may have passions, they may have skills, they may even just be able to go in and share their job experience for a while and answer questions and make it more relatable to students.
I guess the game's interactive, but is there also an online component to it?
Yes. The online component allows students to go in and make customized characters. It's a simulation event, and they're able to go in and answer questions. When they answer those questions, they get simulation dollars. So from that, they get a hypothetical portfolio where they can choose a balanced or an aggressive approach, and they get to see what would happen if they were in the real world investing this money.
When a child goes to college, gets a job, becomes part of an employer-sponsored retirement plan, a 401k, it's not intuitive that people just know how investments work. And certainly where we are in our society today, it's more and more the role of the individual to take that responsibility on themselves to be able to make decisions about their own financial future. And certainly investing is a critical part of having a secure retirement.
And really looking at the long-term investment strategy, so it's not about all these short-term fixes and quick changes for students. It looks at that long-term approach.
Well, it makes them make choices because bottom line, at the end of the day, it really is about a child learning to make choices and that with certain choices come consequences, correct?
Exactly.
How do the teachers like it?
The teachers are very engaged. So we give them the opportunity to come in and get some training if they'd like to. But what's neat is we send volunteers in teams of two or three, and they actually work with the teacher. So the teacher's hands-on at the kickoff and then throughout the weeks when we do the online piece.
We're going to continue our conversation with Nicole here on BusinessWise tomorrow. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Nicole Gordon. Nicole is the Manager of Community Relations of Fidelity Investments Midwest Regional Site. And Nicole, you've been involved with the Investing with Students program that Fidelity sponsors. And it's a program where you go into the schools and help seventh graders with this investing game and really helping them strengthen their math skills. What are some of the things you found about this program that maybe you didn't expect to find when you started it?
I think the program's really unique in the fact that it aligns businesses, community, and volunteers. It looks for ways to integrate students and help them learn, but it also benefits the company because, you know, we're able to go in and say we've made a difference and we've brought that back to impacting students and their scores in math.
How does the program relate to what students are actually learning in the classroom? I can understand how it relates to life later on, but how does it relate to their current life as seventh grade students?
It actually looks at the Common Core standards and it filters beyond seventh grade. We've got a plan in place that we're tracking students' progress until they actually graduate. And we're looking at things that they're tested on, such as ACT. A big part of the ACT has to do with what they're learning in seventh grade. And if the students cannot grasp those concepts and fully integrate them into their memory, then going forward, they're not going to be able to retain it for those tests that are so important to get into college and really prepare them for college and career readiness.
And, you know, Nicole, we're talking about investing for the long term, but, you know, for a seventh grader, the long term is eighth grade, right?
Yeah.
No, so, it's 3 o'clock.
So the way that you're doing it, I suppose, with a game-like situation where you allow them to be, quote, millionaires at the end of the time spent, that's really allowing them to see how these financial lessons that they probably don't even think of as lessons are really making an impact in how they could change their lives somewhere down the road. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I think a student said it best to their teacher last year when they said, "Miss Gilbride, do you know we're actually learning what you're teaching in our class through the Fidelity Online Challenge?" And that was so interesting because the students, you know, they're into the competitive nature, they're into the online gaming, they're into all of these high-tech tools. And so we had to find a way to bring it down to their level and make it something that was fun. And then at the end, you know, when we have this culminating event on our campus and we've got all of the different students, that makes it come to life for them.
Nicole, if someone listening today would like to learn more, if they would like to learn how their school could participate or how they could get involved, what's your contact information?
My email is Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E, dot Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, at fmr.com.
Thank you very much for being our guest and for everything you're doing. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, the topic today is we have a lot of people that are starting businesses either on a part-time or full-time basis. And one of the first questions we generally get asked is, what type of entity, what type of business should I be? Should I be a proprietorship, a partnership, a limited liability company, a corporation?
There are many things to consider, and certainly that's not a one-answer-fits-all situations. It depends on many things, including if you have outside investors, for example, if you have employees, the nature of the business, the type of industry that you're going to be in.
And I think the one thing that you should know is that just because your respected peer formed a business and they were a certain type of entity, that should have no bearing on whether or not you should be the same type of entity. It depends upon your facts and circumstances.
Your own personal tax situation, other types of income that you have outside of the particular business that you're getting ready to start.
The important thing, I think, is to think through the consequences of each of the forms. And generally, you're probably going to choose between a corporation and a limited liability company. And then there's different tax aspects to those.
And my general advice is that it's much easier to go from a sole proprietorship, which is like a Schedule C, an LLC, for example, taxed as a sole proprietor or as a partner, move that later to a corporation because it's very difficult to go the other way. It's very difficult to form a corporation and then say, oops, we made a mistake. We should have been an LLC. There's negative tax consequences many times. So if you start as an LLC or a sole proprietor partnership, you can always change to a corporation much easier than the other way.
Right. And when you say difficult, what you really mean is it costs you typically money in terms of taxes. And we're really addressing the tax consequences of these types of entities. There's legal consequences as well, which certainly you should get legal advice on.
Again, there's not a one-answer-fits-all situations. You have to look in a very broad 360-degree perspective about what it is you're trying to accomplish, and not just now either. You need to be thinking about what's going to happen the next 5 years, the next 10 years. Are you going to be looking for outside investors? What are they going to want to see? Are you going to sell the business? Are you growing the business purely to turn around and have a transition event in the near term?
Do you want to look like a business as opposed to an individual? There's also the appearance of your entity.
So bottom line, before you organize your business in any of the particular legal entities that we mentioned, seek outside advice. You do not want to make a mistake when it comes to the type of business structure that you are going to operate your business through. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. Many business owners are so ingrained in the day-to-day operations of their business that they really, many times, can't see the forest for the trees. They are just working, working, working without really thinking about how they take their business to the next level. And the truth is that unless you work on your business is going to be stuck in a rut. So what can you do as a business owner to take that lunge and actually get your business accelerated so that you can achieve your goals and your dreams? The first thing that I think people really need to do is step back, take a look at where you're at today, and then put in writing goals that you want to achieve in the next year, the next 5 years, the next 10 years. Then identify where you need to make improvements. And the real key to that is surrounding yourself with people
who can bring objective thoughts to you. Surround yourself with people who can really bring resources and talents to you so that you can see where you're at and what needs to change within your organization. For example, perhaps you're selling multiple lines of products and you think that one particular line is generating profits, but it really may be dragging you down. So one key identifier is to determine whether or not it makes sense to shift how you're spending your time and your precious resources to those activities, to the sales of those products that really can enhance your overall financial position. I call this identifying critical success factors. What are the critical success factors in your business that you can monitor every day, every week, every month, every year that will really allow you to take your business to the next level? If you do not have critical success factors, if you don't know what's driving the value in your business, then you're going to be stuck in that rut for a long time. Start today. Put a game plan together. Hold yourself accountable. Put other people in the room, in your organization, and outside advisors that can help you take your business to the next level so that you can achieve your goals and your dreams for your family. I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.